You're listening to The Profile.
Hi, and welcome to The Profile podcast. I'm Andy Peck. For the last 19 years, it's been my joy to investigate how Christians can lead better by talking to a variety of Christian leaders inside and outside the Christian world. So whether you are in a leadership role or simply looking to maximize your influence for God, I hope you find this next conversation helpful. The show is brought to you by Premier Christianity, the UK's leading Christian magazine. Get full online access and the print magazine every month by becoming a subscriber. See special offers available now at premierchristianity.com. When it comes to measuring the success of someone's leadership, the cliche is sometimes used, no success without successors. It's a maxim that only partially applies because in many cases a leader is not in charge of who succeeds them. But it does amplify the importance of succession and developing new leaders. But it's not just successors that are needed. If your ministry or business is a success, you will want to be developing new leaders to work alongside you. Indeed, many have found the failure to develop new leaders, perhaps because they like to be the fulcrum for activity themselves, has stifled the work. Well, to help us think through this important element of developing new leaders, I'm joined by Ali Campbell, a youth and children's ministry consultant and manager and founder of Paraclesis, who has developed umpteen leaders, especially young people. He also offers line management and supervision training for leaders as part of his consultancy work. So, Ali, welcome back to the Leadership Show.
Thanks, Andy. Good to be with you.
Now, of course, the kind of context we're working with determines how easily we can develop new leaders. So let's assume we're in control of spotting potential leaders and developing them over time to the point where we can safely allow them to function without supervision. So that will be the context. We may, you know, go into other areas, but let's start with that. So as you're reflecting on maybe developing a potential new leader, are the key things that you look for?
I guess to start with, this might sound weird, but I'm looking for people that don't want to be a leader.
Right, fair
as
enough.
Opposed to those that do. Sometimes people are keen to push themselves forward just because they want a bit of profile, they want a platform, they want to have a chance to do something up front. What I tend to look for is somebody who is just quietly getting on with serving and helping to make stuff happen. And they're often those who've got their eye on what others need rather than what do I want to do? How can I serve others rather than how can I create a position for myself? So I guess my first thing is looking for those who've got a real heart for others. And for me, that means serving. I really like John 3:30, where John is talking about the ministry of Jesus as Jesus is coming. John's got followers. He's got people he's developed who are following him. So in that sense, he's a leader. But then he says to his own followers, he must increase and I must decrease. And I guess there's a kind of what's the heart orientation of somebody? Do they want to increase and grow in terms of their profile and presence? Or do they want to see Jesus glorified? And so it's about him, not about them. In which case, they're people that are often willing to serve wherever help is needed. I'm looking for people that will put the chairs out and tidy up after an event rather than float around thinking they've got an important job to do.
Right. Now, that sounds eminently wise. Presumably, there are red flags as well. And maybe you've already hinted that someone who wants to be a leader may be a bit of a red flag.
Yeah, I think so. And also in terms of particular areas where people think, I guess they have a right to step into. They've got something to say. But also those who don't think they've got anything to learn. So that, you know, so this is where I would say a key marker for me of somebody who's got great potential as a leader is somebody who's teachable. And conversely, somebody who thinks they know everything needs to do some work on themselves, perhaps before they're given opportunity. So I would say character first is really important over the kind of charisma or gifting that somebody might have. And if people need to do some work on themselves, it's possible you can be joining in with stuff and be volunteering and part of a team, and in that sense, involved in leadership. But I would say that if somebody needs to work on their character, who they are, and what's in their heart, I think that comes first. And it's for me, it's a red flag if they think, I've got nothing to learn. I know it all. I can bring whatever's needed in any situation. That's a red flag for me.
Ali, from what you've said, what do you make of the verse which says, if anyone aspires to be, I think it's in the old English, King James Version, aspires to be a bishop, they desire a good thing. Is some sort of desire valuable?
I guess still it's that it again, it's what's the purpose of it? I mean, Ephesians 4 talks about us, the purpose of us using all of our giftings and ministry itself as being for building up others for works of service. So if somebody's heart is to equip others, then that's great. If their heart is to kind of create something around themselves and build something that's about them, then that's very different. So there's desiring things with the right intention and with the right heart. Ambition's not wrong, but is it ambitious for God's kingdom, or is it ambition for ourselves and the spotlight? And that's hard to discern, but I think it's important to be journeying with people and trying to work out where they're coming from as we develop them as leaders.
And Ali, if someone you train, maybe you've identified someone, you've started working with them, and you're just thinking this isn't working. Maybe you've discovered that their aspirations are a bit unhealthy, or they have more work to do in their character that maybe wasn't obvious to you. What do you do then? How do you have those toughish conversations?
Carefully, because I think it, again, if we're wanting to be pastoral and work with people, we have to work with where they are, not with where we wish they were. And sometimes that's a challenge of leadership. I have to ask myself if somebody has, been developed under me and grown into a position of leadership, rather than think critically of them if there's things that are highlighted as we go on that journey, I tend to think, what have I missed? Rather than what's wrong with them, if that makes sense. It's like, how have I not seen this? So then it's trying to think pastorally, how do we work with people who we've already given, perhaps created space for, and then think, actually, I've made a mistake in giving them opportunity too soon. Maybe there's more that they need to discover about this particular area that they want to step into. Sometimes people think they're great at teaching others, for example. So you give them an opportunity to do a Bible study. And they're great, but actually give them a different context and they're not so great. And it sometimes needs to be something that's teased out. I guess part of the challenge really is not over-promising what you're going to create for people in terms of space in which they can develop and use their gifting. And there needs to be perhaps in that sense much more journeying with before you let people fly. And I think that's part of just understanding ourselves in terms of our own leadership and our own ministry. Have I released others quickly because I'm getting tired of particular pieces of work? So if there's stuff I don't enjoy doing, have I raised somebody else up quickly because I'd rather someone else was doing that piece of work than me? So there's always that kind of, what have I done, I guess, that I think is an important question to ask. And then working past it, it's gently talking to people about what is it you feel passionate about, what you're enjoying, about what you're bringing, and just gently asking, is there anything that you think I can do to help you continue to grow? So rather than presenting them with, I don't think this is working, it's almost a mentoring coaching situation where you're trying to help them see for themselves, actually, maybe I'm not the right fit for this. Maybe there's things I need to still work on, maybe I'm not ready. And sometimes people can feel that, but they don't know how to articulate it. They might sense it when they're leading something that they don't feel comfortable or they're not 100% sure it's where they're supposed to be. But they feel like they've said yes to you. They're committed to you as the leader. They want to do something that's going to please you, which isn't, shouldn't be the way things are, but often that's what happens. So having those honest conversations is often something that somebody's looking for and waiting for. They just need permission to say, oh, I'm so glad we've had this conversation. I didn't feel I was ready. So that's happened a few times. I think other times it's just being a little bit blunt with people. When you've done all of that pastoral support stuff and you talk things through. It's just being honest and saying, I don't think this is working. I'd love you to be part of what we're doing. I think we need to look for a different role. But then that comes down to kind of, are we creating leaders where they're just the kind of way they understand themselves is as a leader, and then there's no kind of job description that goes with that. They just walk around thinking, well, I'm a leader. But actually, most roles have some kind of function associated with them. So if you're leading worship, your primary role is to lead others in worship. If you're teaching, it's to open scripture for people, perhaps. If it's pastoral care and you're leading in that space, it's bringing that gifting that you have. So I think there's a challenge to us. We raise up leaders and even develop leaders of thinking outside of the kind of terms of what a job might be, what a role might be, and having too generic an understanding of leader, where we just have a load of people floating around thinking they're leaders. But what is it we've asked them to do, and how can we equip them to do that? And if not, do we need to have a look at other things that they can bring?
That's enormously helpful, Ali. And one obvious thing that you did say is that we do need to engage with people. And, you know, sadly, it's been in the national news where youth leadership has not functioned well because a leader has dropped people, it would seem, you know, left them in a vacuum, and they got walked away quite upset because they didn't know why they'd suddenly been dropped. And that's massively problematic. And something you're saying is you need to engage. If it's not working, you need to say so and say why. So thank you for clarifying that. So helpful.
I mean, on that, I think it's really important that if we effectively promise somebody that we're going to mentor them, we're going to journey with them, we're going to give them opportunity, then we have a responsibility to fulfill that and see that through. So I think arranging to meet with people, planning for that, making it happen, and recognizing, you know, Jesus had 12 disciples, and of those, he had three that I think we could say were close friends. And if you think those were the three he primarily invested in, if Jesus, who was the Son of God, could only seriously invest in three, a question we need to ask about our own leadership and how we develop others is, how many people am I trying to develop? And have I spread myself too thin? So actually, I can't deliver on what I've promised people because I've promised it to too many people. I need to be more focused and more disciplined about who I'm raising up. And in that sense, have people within my own team who are raising others up, so that there's a cascade of leadership development happening. I'm not the fulcrum for whether it takes place or not. And that's why it's so important to have team and have team ministry rather than one person leading from the top. I just think that way lies disaster for lots of reasons.
Ali, maybe we could move on to the process of overseeing the training, the mentoring, the supervision of those that we put into a place of leadership, or maybe initially alongside us, perhaps. How can you give sufficient time and oversight without the person feeling that you're babysitting them? And when do you get to the point where you think, yeah, I've developed a new leader? Sorry, there's two questions there, but you can take them in two parts.
I mean, I guess, but sometimes it is age and experience. So as a leader, you can inherit team, which we haven't mentioned yet, but the idea that you inherit people that are volunteering or serving, and you have a role of developing them. But actually, for some of those people, they've been doing this area of work, whatever it might be, youth ministry, children's ministry, church leadership, they've been doing it longer than you have. So in that sense, your developing of them becomes more a journey and a conversation, rather than you have stuff that you need to impart that they need to learn from you. And on the other hand, you've got people that maybe are 18, 19, 20, just starting out. So huge gifting, massive potential, already leading amongst their peers, perhaps, without intention, but just naturally, you know, natural leaders amongst their peers. And so you can recognize that leadership and that gifting, but then there needs to be a far more focused attempt to kind of develop those people into leaders. And that takes more time, and that takes more presence for you. And that is labor intensive. That's not something that you can just have a shortcut to developing a leader. If they need to grow in their experience, and if they need to grow in their the questions they're asking about what it looks like to be a leader. If you've got an 18, 19-year-old leading their peers, how does that shift away from they're just my mates to I have a leadership responsibility in this space? And that's very different for an 18, 19-year-old who's leading young people to maybe somebody who's an adult who's been doing this for 20 years. There's clearly a difference in terms of age and life experience between a 40-year-old and an 18-year-old, much less so with an 18, 19-year-old who's stepping into leadership for the first time. So it's recognizing where people are at. It's recognizing what's needed. And I guess it's recognizing the shape of the role. So some roles have a lot of responsibility. And maybe when people are initially stepping into those, there needs to be more care given to kind of the amount of responsibility they have. And then the authority they have that goes with that responsibility. It's like, can they make decisions, or do they have to defer to you every time they need to decide something? And gradually you kind of lessen what needs to come to you so that they can start to do it themselves. I mean, Jesus models this with his own disciples when he sends out the 72, when his disciples go and do stuff. You know, it's they're at that point where they've been journeying with Jesus for a while, and then they get sent out. They don't go out on their own, which is interesting. I think, again, it's about not the individual leader, but about working with others. So they go out in teams. And I think that's really important for development. So I would say it's great if you've got a young team to look at developing them as a team together. So how do they support, encourage, sharpen one another as you're developing them? And maybe you've got older team, there's a little bit more of a personal approach to how you develop those individuals. And also recognize that some people just need space to bring what they've got because they've been doing it longer than you. They may be better than you. So, you know, putting your ego aside and creating space for people to bring all that they can and celebrating that rather than thinking, oh, no, they're better than me. I'm the leader. I'm supposed to know what I'm doing in every aspect of ministry. That's just not true. And we need greater vulnerability in our own leadership. And I think if there's one thing I'd look for in a leader, above all other things, it would be a willingness to be vulnerable and recognize our own weakness and our need of God, rather than thinking that I've got the gifting, I've got the talent, I can do this.
Your last comment, Ali, leads me into the question I was going to ask, and that is the potential ego challenge. Because although as Christians, it ought to be okay for others to thrive more than us, clearly, it's not always comfortable for particularly, say, a senior leader with associates in a church, or certainly a youth worker with up-and-coming leaders within their midst. That can be tricky. And I'm just wondering how we analyze our motives and how we pray for new leaders before God.
I mean, I guess ultimately as a leader, it's asking myself, what is it I want? And being honest about that before God, you know, what is it I want? And a long time ago for me, some people were praying for me, and they really felt that the key kind of thing for my kind of what I would bring in terms of my leadership was to add value to others. Now, I don't want to put that on everybody else that I develop, but I think there's something around, you know, my motivation, my heart attitude, what can get in the way of me developing others and creating space for others. And there's what I would call the kind of terrible seas of attitude that can then crush, that's a C, but can crush others and not enable space for people to bring their best. So the first one I would say is competition. I'm not in competition as a leader with anybody else. But that is an attitude of my heart. I have to be in that place where, you know, Philippians 2, Paul talks about it. And I think sometimes we can read Philippians 2, your attitude should be the same as Christ. And then Paul goes into almost like a poem or a hymn about how amazing Christ is. But then we can focus too much on, wow, Jesus was amazing, you know, gave up all the glory of heaven and, you know, didn't grasp at things in order to kind of make something for himself, made himself nothing for us. But Paul starts that by saying your attitude should be the same. So the attitude thing's really key. So I'm not in competition with anybody else. I shouldn't be comparing what I'm bringing with what anybody else is doing. Somebody once said, comparison is the root of all inferiority. And if we think about it for a minute in terms of ministry, there's always somebody who's got a more thriving ministry than we have, appears to have it more together than I do. And comparison can just eat away at our heart attitude. It can create envy. It can create jealousy, all kinds of things that aren't healthy for us. So we need to part comparison, think it's not about what anyone else is doing or comparing myself. It's think, am I doing what God's called me to do? And that's the ministry I've got to step into, and that's what he has for me. So I shouldn't be competing. I shouldn't be comparing. And if we do those two things, they lead to another C, which is where we can be critical or cynical about ministry or about our role or about what we're doing or about what others are doing. So have I got a critical spirit, you know, when I look at what others are doing and how others are doing it? And when I do mentoring for youth and children's workers, I often use those C's to just say, let's check our attitude as we start. How are we doing on these different areas? Are we comparing ourselves with others? Are we competing with others? Have we allowed criticism and cynicism to sneak into our work as we talk about what we're doing, but also about what others are doing? And for me, those are kind of red flags about, yeah, I need to check my heart out. So for me, there's no ego in ministry because it's all for Jesus, isn't it? And we know that's true. But then when it comes to what we're doing, we can freak out a bit if other people are doing it better. That's why I love John the Baptist as a great example of a leader, because to his own disciples, he says, there goes the Lamb of God, when they start to follow Jesus instead of him. I'd be a bit miffed if I was John. I've invested in these people. They're my disciples. But for him, it was all about Jesus. And I think for us, if it's all about Jesus, then if they're following Jesus and Jesus has called them and they're bringing these amazing gifts, then God has given them to me to equip and enable them to do what God's called them to. That's an exciting part I get to play in their ministry development and growth. And they're, you know, God's got me. It doesn't matter. I think there's a challenge if we define who we are first and foremost by our role, rather than I'm a child of God. So my role is to lead this church, but first and foremost, I'm a child of God. So I think that it's having that perspective that's really helpful and checking our attitude. And there should be no ego in that space at all.
Well, amen to that, Ali. That's well said. Ali, you offer line management supervision training for leaders. What kind of time frame are you envisaging when someone is line managing supervisors? Is that kind of how long is a piece of string? But presumably there's some minimum levels of checking in with someone when you're supervising them.
So I'll give you an example. You know, church leader, they employ somebody for the first time to a youth worker role or a children's worker role. And for both the church and the person, say it's the first time. It's their first salaried role. It's the church's first appointment. You've really got to set the tone for how you want that relationship to work from the outset and then establish it. So that does take time. And I would say for a first appointment, for somebody new to salaried ministry, you should be meeting fortnightly in a line management meeting. And that doesn't need to be longer than an hour, hour and a half. And it needs to focus on the work that's happening and looking at how you can support them to do the work that you've appointed them to do. But, you know, that's the key purpose of a line management meeting for me. 20 minutes down the pub once every 6 weeks is not a line management meeting. And I think sometimes people think, well, you know, I'm just going to be all matey with our new employee. There's nothing wrong with that in terms of building friendship, but that's not to kind of take the place of a line management meeting that's properly looking at the work and helping to support somebody in their job. Churches appoint people generally to a job description and a person specification. So there you've got your framework for what you might talk about in a line management meeting. The challenge comes is if you've appointed somebody with a job description with certain things they're expected to do, and you don't actually meet with them or check in with them that those things are happening, they don't know whether they're hitting any kind of target or expectations because you don't meet with them to talk about it. So then they're floundering because they're not wanting you to tell them how to do their job. You've appointed them, but they do want to know, am I doing what you're expecting? Is this the right sense of travel and direction? So I think meeting is really key, and it needs to be something that goes in the diary and stays there. Often it's the first thing that gets nudged if the church leader's super busy. Oh, we'll meet next week, and then next week never happens. It's got to be something that's in the diary that doesn't get shifted. It's as important as other meetings that they've got. And what you're saying to the worker is, I really value what you're bringing. It's not about micromanagement. It's about really taking responsibility as the church leader for this person that you've appointed and looking at how you can support them in every way possible. A line management meeting also should be a space where both parties bring what they want to talk about. It shouldn't be a list of tasks the line management throws back at the person who's working. It should be a conversation about the key stuff that needs to be explored. And as the worker, they need to be able to bring stuff that they're exploring, that they're thinking about, that they're developing. And that just helps them grow in confidence if they've got space to bring those things and have those conversations. So I would say when you start out fortnightly, if you've got an experienced practitioner, I think still monthly is important to have a line management meeting. And they need to be regular, they need to be in the diary, and they need to not be shifted because other stuff comes up.
Ali, as we close, you offer line management supervision training. You also are founder of Paraclesis, which is serving Christian youth workers. How would people get in touch with you?
They can drop me an email, at ali@theresource.org.uk, or my email for Paraclesis, ali@paraclesis.org.uk. Either of those can drop me just an inquiry, just connect. That would be great. And I'm happy to help with general advice and support around line management supervision and mentoring of youth workers. And if people want anything specific, then we could chat about that as well.
Fabulous. And it's Paraclesis with a K, Parakles.
It's Parklesis, Paraclesis. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, Ali, it's been terrific to chat with you. This is decades of wisdom poured into our conversation. So thank you so much. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Andy.
That was my chat with Ali Campbell, the manager and founder of Paraclesis and a youth work ministry consultant. Email address again if you want to get in touch with him, ali@theresource.org.uk. It's clear that developing and supervising new leaders is a key work. We knew that already. But it's interesting to me how much time needs to be factored in the supervision and reflection on how a new leader is developed and developing. So I loved his reflection also that we, in selecting potential new leaders, we look at those who are servants first and perhaps do not want to be leaders. It's important too that if our own ego is a factor, that we deal with it and that we see our role as helping others thrive, even if they outshine us. And if we're honest, sometimes that really is a challenge. So this is Andy Peck thanking you for your company this week and looking forward to the next time. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.